Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joining us on the Harbor One Hotline from the NBA bubble in Orlando, Florida, is Sports Illustrated NBA reporter Chris Mannix. Chris is brought to you by Star Market and the brand new Star Market at the Hub on Causeway, just outside the TD Garden. Hey, Chris, how are you?
What's going on, guys?
First question from me. Did you have second thoughts about putting yourself in this position or no?
No second thoughts going into it. I mean, safety-wise, I mean, this is probably the safest place you could possibly be on the planet. And, you know, having covered the NBA for the last few months, you know, through Zoom calls with phone calls, text messages, I mean, you had to do something different. And this is, you know, I wouldn't call it a unique opportunity, but certainly with only, you know, 9 or 10 media members, reporters inside this this campus, you know, you're going to have a chance to do some things that the other people can't. And you know, that's kind of what you, in today's kind of media landscape, that those are rare opportunities. And I'm pretty giddy about it, actually.
What did you, or what have you thought of a lot of the players' reactions that they have taken to social media, whether it's J.R. Smith or Enes Kanter or Rajon Rondo? What did you think?
It's not a good look. Some of it, like, you know, the Rondo picture of, you know, is this Motel 6? I mean, give me a break. I mean, that's it's a nice hotel room that they're staying in. It kind of makes, you know, NBA players look like dilettantes to a degree. I'm not a huge fan of everybody posting pictures of their food. I think that's kind of dumb. But it's not like you're not in white collar prison here. Like you're in a hotel room. You get good food. You get as much, you know, water, drinks as you want. Like it is what it is. I mean, the challenging part certainly is what I'm involved in right now, which is, you know, the media members that come down here, because they haven't been regularly tested like the players have been tested at their own facilities. We've got to do a hard 7-day quarantine. We are quite literally not allowed to leave our hotel room for the next 6 days. And, I can tell you, having completed day one, that's going to be problematic in about 4 or 5 days. I start climbing some walls.
So, Chris, from your perspective, obviously there's going to be opportunities to build relationships. You talked about you're one of the few in there. What is it going to be like moving forward for you as a media member? Are you going to be at all the games? Are you going to be Zoom calling interviews? Will you have actual direct contact with players for interviews? What's that process going to be like for you?
Yeah, there are two obvious upsides to being inside. One is that you can go to every practice and every shoot around and watch like you would every practice. Theoretically, you can get one-on-one interviews with players if you request them. They've got to be done uniquely. You can't just sidle up to a player and sit down next to him and do an interview. They've got to be set up where you're 6 feet apart and you know, wearing masks and all that goes into it, but you can get one-on-ones where on the outside you really can't. And the other thing is, you know, you guys can remember, I mean, it used to be media members sat on the floor, you know, for games. Now, because of, you know, the need to put seats in those spots and make money off them, media members are often, you know, way up in the rafters at times covering games, or at least well off the floor. Now, in this situation, we're back on the floor. Not only are we on the floor, we're on the floor where you can hear everything. Like, there's not going to be any kind of, you know, ambient crowd noise, or maybe if there is manufactured crowd noise, it won't be that loud. you'll be able to hear player interactions, you know, coaching interactions, you know, all sorts of stuff that you couldn't get otherwise. And I think it's going to give us the ability to, you know, give readers a look into, you know, the what goes on in these games deeper than maybe we ever have before. So those are the two things that I think you substantively gain by being part of this experience.
We're talking to Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated and SI.com. He is in the NBA bubble in Orlando, Florida. Began yesterday and will be quarantined for the next 6 days, as he told us. There have been some smart aleck things written and said. Stephen A. Smith talked about it. There's an Instagram model who said she's been invited inside the bubble already. What kind of pressures will there be within the player community to not screw this thing up?
There's significant pressure, which doesn't mean that, quite frankly, that Stephen A. Smith is wrong. I don't think that, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if, you know, somebody tries to sneak somebody in or something goes on behind the scenes. But look, we're talking about, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, 25-year-old, you know, single guys that have never been locked in to this type of situation for very long. So would a scenario like that happening shock me? No, it wouldn't. I mean, I think there's certainly, you know, ongoing conversations with players about not, you know, screwing this up, as you said, making sure that you follow the rules to the best of your ability. You know, they've got, I think, like basically ex-Army, you know, people in here to like monitor this type of stuff to make sure nobody's coming in and out of the bubble. So, you know, that's something that that they're watching pretty close. I think the most significant danger to the bubble to me is what happens in about a month. In about a month, they're going to presumably let friends and family come in under similar quarantine rules once the first round of the playoffs is over and you eliminate basically half the league. What happens then? Like, you have young kids maybe wandering around. You've got family members. They want to use the park. I mean, that to me represents the biggest threat to the bubble going forward, because right now, I can tell you, it's as close to airtight as you can possibly get. I mean, the testing procedures and the protocols they go through. I mean, I have to be tested here every single day, even though I'm not leaving my room at any point in time. Going forward, you have to be tested every single day. You have to fill out an online questionnaire that effectively tells you any symptoms you might have, take your temperature every day, take a blood oxygen level every single day. Like, this is pretty intense, the protocols that they're going through. So for right now, I think it's in pretty good shape. I just wonder, you know, once the family members start to come in and maybe there's some outside influences, is that problematic?
How are things going logistically right now? Because I think I read somewhere that the Celtics were late getting onto a court at one point because of their quarantine, and there was another time where they had to move courts, or like, just how are they figuring everything out right now as these teams are practicing?
It's very much still a work in progress. I mean, they have carved out basically 3-hour blocks for teams to practice. And look, for logistical reasons, sometimes they get on the court a little late. Sometimes they stay a little late. It screws up the team that's after it. And remember, after every team is done, they have to sanitize that court to make sure that, you know, everything is clean before the next team gets on there. So there are definitely some minor logistical hurdles that have to be run through. And look, every team here, for the most part, wants to practice as long as possible. I mean, these guys are getting their players on the court in 3-on-3 and 5-on-5 situations for the first time in almost 4 months. So, you know, they wanted to, you know, take every minute of it. Sometimes that can lead to a little bit of overlap and some problems with that side of it. But you know, these are minor issues right now that teams are dealing with, and nothing I think that is significant.
Chris, beyond the coronavirus and return to play rules in that area, obviously one of the discussions was, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, the social justice, and, you know, the players' ability to wear messages on the back of their shirts. And we've already seen Anthony Davis, LeBron, some other names opt out of that program. They're going with their traditional names. Is that going to be an issue throughout this? Is that something that players are talking about? Is that still an agenda for some of these guys, the Black Lives Matter movement and the social justice reform?
Well, it absolutely is for a vast majority of players. I mean, LeBron opted out of wearing something different than his name on the back of his jersey. But in every Zoom interview I've seen him do so far, he's wearing his More Than an Athlete hat. And, you know, as has been reported before, I mean, he's got this this voting movement that he's doing that is going to basically lead up to the November election. He'll be pushing that pretty significantly over the next few months. So it's top of mind for most, if not all, of the NBA players here. Now, the issue that the league would probably like to revisit if they could, if they go back in time, is that they probably should have involved more people in the process of choosing what to wear on these jerseys. I mean, the union was involved. Like, this wasn't a unilateral league decision. The union was involved every step of the way in deciding what would be appropriate to wear on the backs of the uniform. This wasn't Adam Silver sitting in his office going, that sounds good, that sounds good, that sounds good. This was Michelle Roberts, Chris Paul. I mean, people involved in this process on the union side pretty heavily. So they, I think if they could go back, though, they probably would have put it out to more of the rank and file, gotten LeBron more involved. You heard, you know, Jaylen Brown had reservations. Mike Scott with the 76ers had some reservations. So I think they would have done some things a little bit differently. But, you know, the player's going to find their way to push this narrative as far as they possibly can, because it's important. And they want to make sure that the social justice movement doesn't get lost in conversations about Rajon Rondo's thumb injury or, you know, Ben Simmons' back and all the things that go into covering a basketball season. Well, one thing I would say, too, about the – yeah, there's so much talk about, like, you know, why can't players say what they want about Hong Kong and China? To my knowledge, and I've asked this from a number of different people, not one player is asked to wear something like that on his jersey. Not one player is asked to wear, like, free Hong Kong on the back of his jersey. Not to say that there aren't people that feel that way within the NBA. There obviously are. But it's disingenuous to say that players are being prevented from wearing something about China when, again, to my knowledge, no one is asked to actually do that.
In the NHL, there is a 5 p.m. deadline today for players who elect to opt out. Stephen Kampfer of the Bruins is the only Bruins player to this point who has elected to opt out of returning. In the NBA, is the assumption that if you got on the plane and flew to the bubble, you're in, or can players still opt out?
They can still opt out. The NBA set a deadline, if you want to call it that, for back in, I believe it was June 24th, and that deadline came and went, and players were still, you know, opting in and out at that time. Players were strongly considering whether or not to play. As recently as a few days ago, you know, role players that I know who are going back and forth on this issue for myriad reasons. I mean, players are not speaking with one voice on this issue. It's, you know, personal reasons, social justice reasons, health reasons. There are a lot of things to consider as they prepare to quarantine themselves for a number of months. But yeah, I think where we're at right now, as we're, you know, into training camp and what, about a week to 10 days away from starting scrimmages, I think the guys that are here, or at least are here for the foreseeable future. I don't expect there to be any further opt-outs from the NBA rank and file.
I like the Celtics' chances in the Eastern Conference, but then I heard that Kemba Walker is going to start on a minutes restriction because of his knee injury, which, again, I mean, it's been 4 months since we've seen basketball, and I would have thought a lot of the injuries would have certainly improved in 4 months. Is that more just because there hasn't been action for so long, or does it speak to the severity of his injury?
No, Rich, I think that's it's the first part of it. I think it's Kemba's been on his own for so long and hasn't, you know, nobody's played 5-on-5. But I think with that type of injury, that was a nagging injury that just lingered for so long, they want to make sure there's no re-aggravation there. So he'll be on a minutes restriction, I would guess, for maybe the first 4 or 5 games. But, you know, once we get to the tail end of the regular season, certainly into the playoffs, you're going to see Kemba Walker, you know, just ready to roll, like 35, 40 minutes a game if he has to. It would take a re-aggravation of that injury to force Kemba out of that type of minutes load, and I just don't see it happening. I think he's going to be, you know, just fine once they get through the first 4 or 5 games of the season.
Certainly fans probably don't know exactly what to expect from their team, you know, given this unprecedented layoff and restart here. Are you getting the feeling that coaches and players feel the same way? Is there some uncertainty that, you know, the Bucks can just pick up where they left off, or did it benefit one team and maybe hurt another team? Is there an unknown factor here within the players and coaches themselves?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, nobody has any idea what to expect. I mean, coaches are just getting, as we speak, really a first, second, and third look at what their teams are going to be able to do, or what their players look like after a long layoff. I mean, it's you only get snippets right now from team released videos, but, you know, you look at Carmelo Anthony, looks like he lost 20 pounds during this break. Rajon Rondo looked like the Incredible Hulk before he got injured last night. You know, guys are looking different, playing different, and once you see them start to get into scrimmages, you're going to see what kind of basketball condition they're in. But look, I would be shocked. Put this, I would be shocked if this won't chalk in the playoffs. We get Bucks versus Lakers. I don't believe it. I just think too much has changed and too much can change over the next month or so that it just makes it impossible not to expect something completely unpredictable. Maybe it's like the 99 lockout where you had the Knicks and 8 seed go all the way to the NBA Finals. Maybe you have like a team like the Portland Trailblazers, you know, shock somebody in the first round and make a run, you know, all the way to the finals. I just think something loopy is going to happen because this is not what the NBA left off with. This should not be considered, you know, where the teams were in mid-March. This is an entirely different thing in a lot of cases with entirely different players. When you look at the Blazers having a new front court, Ben Simmons back in Philadelphia. I mean, this is just a totally different thing. It's going to, I think, have some wacky results.
Spurs head coach Greg Popovich is 71. Rockets head coach Mike D'Antoni is 68. Lakers assistant coach Lionel Hollins is 66. Are there legitimate concerns about these older coaches in the NBA being in the danger zone here?
There are legitimate concerns. I believe Lionel Hollins already opted out. I don't think he's going to be in LA or he's in Orlando with the team. Mike D'Antoni has said he's going to wear a mask on the sidelines. I'm not entirely sure what Pop's going to do, but either way, it's something that's closely monitored, you know, by the league. I mean, these men are in, you know, the kind of that warning area, and as safe as the league has been in keeping the coronavirus out of the bubble, and will continue to be as diligent as they continue to be. I mean, the worst case scenario is someone like that getting infected and suffering severe health consequences. Now, there's been a weird pushback from the Coaches Association who see this idea of whether it's D'Antoni or Alvin Gentry or Popovich wearing masks as potentially being detrimental to their ability to get jobs in the future. Like, I don't know what they think, whether they think the teams are going to like forget that Mike D'Antoni's almost 70. I don't really understand that rationale, but there's been some pushback about, you know, coaches being forced to wear masks or coaches being, you know, kind of quarantined differently during this experience. So, you know, the NBA, I think, would like to do more with these at-risk coaches that are part of this process, but the Coaches Association and Warren Legarry, who's a coaching agent of many of these men, have pushed back pretty hard on that, and they'll try to limit anything different that's done for them throughout this entire process.
One of the biggest stories in the NBA over the weekend was actually the suspension of Adrian Wojnarowski and then the response by a number of the players and everything else that happened there. I don't want to put you in a weird spot, but what did you think of everything that went down with Woj?
You know, I know Adrian probably regrets it because he's one of the best people I know, and that he, in sending something like that, it just doesn't, it doesn't line up with the person that he is. I just found it more, you know, reprehensible how it was taken and spun and made into this sort of, you know, ESPN is all left wing sort of talking point. I mean, you're a senator from Missouri and you're basically tagging another website on your tweet to try to kind of rile up the mob. I don't understand that at all. I mean, Adrian did what he should have done after the fact. He apologized. He reached out to the senator's office. My understanding is he hasn't been able to reach anyone over there. It seems like the senator would prefer to, you know, just, you know, use the media to drum up support for whatever it is he wants to drum up support for. But as I said at the beginning, guys, there's like they're asking for something that hasn't been asked for. Like, as far as I know, no player or coach or anybody has asked to, you know, wear Free Hong Kong on their jersey or do anything like that. So, you know, I understand that, you know, what's happening over in China is reprehensible. What's happening in Hong Kong right now is reprehensible. But I don't understand why players are necessarily being asked to take issue with something that doesn't resonate with them as much as the Black Lives Matter movement does, as much as, you know, police officers killing black men, as much as that registers with them. I think there's a real disingenuousness to what's going on right now when it comes to some of the stuff that happened the last couple of days.
Chris, you used the word loopy earlier, that you almost expect something loopy to happen in the bubble and with this postseason run. Would you consider the Celtics winning the title loopy?
Not really. I mean, they're that good. I mean, they were third seed when the thing stopped, and you know, you've got a whole bunch of scores on that mix. I think they're, you know, I think they're a co-favorite to all this, and with like four or five other teams that are at the top of the pile. I'm just wondering, when we get into these scrimmages, like, who is just awful? Like, who is just looks like they haven't played basketball? Like, right now, all you hear are good things. I've yet to hear one negative thing about a player coming back. It's not like, well, Jason Tatum hasn't shot the ball in 2 months, but, you know, here's Enes Kanter saying he looks like he's better than he was before. Tatum saying, you know, I'm stronger than I was when I got back. I worked my body during the lockout. I mean, or during the work stoppage. Like, it's all positive right now. At some point, there's going to be negatives. At some point, you're going to see guys that just aren't in shape, whose shooting percentages plummet. I mean, there's going to be, like, I think the shooting percentages in this playoffs are going to be awful. I think they're going to be college basketball level. But my opinion on college basketball is that sucks from top to bottom. Like, it's going to be bad shooting in these NBA playoffs. And I think that's going to play well for teams that are able to score on the inside, that have great defenses, that have interior presences on both ends of the floor. Like, that's something to watch closely as we move forward. Like, how teams are able to manufacture offense when those three-point shots just aren't falling, because shooting is a perishable skill. Like, if you haven't shot the ball for 3 or 4 months, you're not just going to get it back in the span of 3 or 4 weeks. I think it's going to take much longer for some of these guys to regain the skills that they lost during this time off.
Does that hurt a team like the Celtics that has had rebounding issues back when they were still playing basketball?
I think it does. I mean, I think that, you know, not only that, but they are a perimeter-oriented team. I mean, their greatest strength comes with Tatum and Walker and Brown and guys on the outside. So I think that they're going to have to be, you know, not to get too deep in the weeds, but far more aggressive at paint scoring, far better at gang rebounding. I mean, I've said this before and written it. I think Philadelphia is sitting pretty right now. I mean, Philadelphia in mid-March, I mean, they were a disaster. I mean, they were playing out the string. Ben Simmons was done. You know, Brett Brown had 1 foot out the door. Maybe Elton Brand, the GM, was going to get fired. And now here they are. Ben Simmons is back, and the pictures, looks like a monster out there. And they're the team that couldn't shoot threes anyway. So now, you know, everybody else is kind of playing maybe on their playing field. They've got a great defense, three lockdown defenders with Simmons, Embiid, and Josh Richardson, and an ability to score high percentage shots through Embiid in the low post. I mean, I look at Philly. I mean, you know, I don't know how much like maneuvering is going to be done for that opening or those opening round playoff spots. But if you're Boston, you want to make sure you get nothing to do with them. You want Indiana. You want Brooklyn if you can get your hands on them, or whatever the artist formerly known as Brooklyn, right, at this point. You want Orlando at this point. I mean, you want anybody but the Philadelphia 76ers in that first round.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.